expect you to be here for some reason tonight. No. I was just like, I'm thinking to myself all day long, you're not going to be here Wednesday night, you're not going to be here Sunday. You're not going to be here Wednesday, you're not going to be here Sunday. I'm just thinking. And so this is a good surprise. Good surprise. All right. Good evening. We are in Ephesians 6th chapter, and we are ready to talk about the whole armor of God. And as I told Charles right before class, this is honestly, when you read these verses, these are some really, really rich verses to go through and to study. And I hope that you find that to be true as well. I guess I need to put it on presentation. There we go. As we talked about on Sunday, the 5th and 6th chapters are uniquely tied together, and we go back to that idea in verse 1 of chapter 5 to be imitators of God as dear children. And we laid out this chart for you that showed that in these two chapters, Paul is outlining what life is like for us as Christians using these analogies with the home, with business and society, and in spiritual nature as well. And we talked about how that this is spiritual warfare. As we get into chapter 6 and verse 10, we start turning this page, and Paul starts saying, "Finally, my brethren," he said all these things in these five chapters to get us to this, to get us to this point where he's going to talk about a spiritual warfare that exists. And so we looked at a few of these things, and we said that God has chosen a plan of salvation. Christians are unified in this church that Christ is the head of, that he died for, that we've been made alive by grace through faith, and that salvation requires both grace and faith. All people can come to know Christ and be saved. There's one body, one spirit, one hope, one Lord, one faith, one baptism, one God and Father of all. We all have roles to fill and work to be doing. Gives new meaning to that song that we sing, that there's work to do, there's much to do, there's work on every hand. We're told in chapter 4 and verse 27, give no place to the devil. And that's going to have even more significance when we get into talking about the whole armor of God. He says, walk in love, walk in light, walk in wisdom. Submit to one another. Husbands and wives, have the godly relationship that Christ has with the church. Children, obey your parents. And parents, consider how you raise your children. Servants and masters, relate to each other in godly ways. And we relate to God as servants to a master. We all have a master, we said on Sunday. It's either Satan or it's God. And we choose who that master is going to be. And we get to verse 10. He says, finally, my brethren, be strong in the Lord and in the power of his might. And when he says be strong, he says have courage. He says have boldness. Have faith. Take comfort. Where? In the Lord. What about the Lord? Well, take comfort in the power of his might. This requires knowledge of God. It requires knowledge of how powerful he is. It requires faith. It requires commitment. It requires sacrifice. It requires work, trust, loyalty. Those are all things he's given to us and demonstrated in us, so we have to demonstrate those back. And we said that all of this is important because as we looked at 1 Peter in 5 verse 8, the devil walks around like a roaring lion. So we come here to talking about the armor of God. And, you know, in verse 11, he says, put on the whole armor of God. And when I was about 18, 19 years old, I got my first chainsaw. My grandmother bought it for me. She made me promise, though, when she handed me the check for that chainsaw, she said, you have to promise me you're going to buy the chaps, the helmet, the face mask, the ear things, the works. Why? To keep me safe. Why do we put on armor? Same reason people put on the gear for when they go chainsaw a tree. Same reason we put on a lot of clothes and a lot of gear when we go out in the cold. It's the same reason mentally why when our boss calls us up and says, hey, I need to speak to you. Come meet in my office. We start gearing ourselves up mentally saying, okay, what did I do? What should I say? How should I approach it? And we start coaching ourselves a little bit. We start mentally arming ourselves. We do all that to protect ourselves. And he says, put on the whole armor of God. Put on the whole armor of God. This is a spiritual battleground that we're talking about. And a battleground, is that a battleground? Shake your heads this way. That's a battleground. We showed that picture on Sunday. That's a battleground. That's trench warfare. He says, put on the whole armor of God. Think about David. I imagine, we read the story of David, and I don't know about you, but I imagine this little boy, maybe my height, young man. He goes out, and he's fighting Goliath. And if you remember the story, Saul offered David the armor. He said, put all this armor on, and it didn't fit. And David took it off, said, no thanks. And he goes out, and he has, what, a slingshot, some stones? But he was fully armored when he went out there. David could have been killed that day, and he still would have won. Simply because he had the full armor of God on his side. And because he had that, he didn't die. God was on his side. God made sure he won. The question, however, is do we put on the whole armor of God? When we look at this, we need to ask ourselves, or let's look at Romans 13, verse 12. In Romans, the writer says, the night is far spent, the day is at hand. Therefore, let us cast off the works of darkness. Let us put on the armor of light. Paul's talked about to the Ephesians the difference between light and darkness. At one point, he even told them, you were darkness. He talked to them about putting on the new man. And now he's telling them, put on the armor. In Romans, it says armor of light. That's the armor we're supposed to be putting on when we put on the full armor of God. In Ephesians 4 and verse 27, he says, give no place to the devil. Think about this. If I go out and about and I'm doing something stupid, like climbing a tree with a chainsaw, and I don't have on, let's say, the helmet, am I fully protected? No. If I go out and I've got the helmet on, but I don't have the gloves, am I fully protected? No. So when he says put on the full armor of God, after he's just told him in chapter 4 and verse 27, don't give place to the devil. He's saying don't let there be a weak link in all of this. Don't give him the time and opportunity to come after you. If it's something you're watching that you shouldn't, turn it off. If it's something you're listening to you shouldn't, turn it off. Walk away. But whatever you do, you cannot give the time and place to the devil. He will take advantage of it. You know, you look at any military strategist, and the best ones are going to find a weakness in the line of defense of the opposing army. They will find a way in. You know, Hannibal Barca said, "We will either make a, we will either find a way or we will make it." And that's what the devil's motto is, in essence. He will either find it or he will make it. And our job is to not give him that opportunity. He says, "Put on the full arm, put on the whole armor of God, that you may be able to stand against the wiles of the devil." Now, Doug told me on Sunday, and this really, this hit home, when Doug says he can make an entire series of lessons, or at least one lesson, out of the word stand, you better go back and check all your notes and make sure you're as fully understanding of this as possible. So that's what I've done. And when you think of that word stand, don't think about this idea of just doing this. Because the devil's not going to come up to you and be sweet about it. The devil's going to come at you like a 300-pound bear. He's going to come at you like a lineman and shooting off that line full force trying to get you on the ground. And when you think about standing, think about someone who is ready to go. Think about someone who has, think of the stance. You know, those football players, they don't just stand around like this. They get down. They get ready to go. I had a kid I was horsing around with the other day in class, and this kid, basketball player, bigger than me. And she comes, and it's a she, and she comes up, and I'm just doing this, and she's trying to push me and push me and push me, and finally she gets me because we're on tile floor, and my foot's going all a little ways, and I go, "Okay, now it's my turn." And she kind of gets her stance, and it's a wide stance. And finally, I just go, boom. I had a little bit more heft to me. And I had a better stance. I had more power, more force. We have to be ready to meet force with force. And I want you to think about that. Stand against the wiles of the devil. What are we defending ourselves against? Well, let's look. 1 Peter 5, verse 8. We've just looked at this. We're talking about someone who, and a spiritual being that walks around like a roaring lion. He is looking. He is on the prey. He is on the hunt for his prey. Seeking someone he can devour. Seeking some soul he can take and steal. That word wiles, kind of unusual word. Vines describes it denotes craft or deceit, a cunning device or devices. So that devil is coming after us with all his cunning devices. If you've got a weak link, he will find it, because he is that skilled at deception, at evil. Consider some of the wiles of the devil. Just think about these for a minute. Sin is sometimes presented as a virtue or even as a religious act. Sin is sometimes disguised as excuses, such as old age or youth, strong temptation, necessity to keep one's job or to provide for your family. Think about the fact that sin is sometimes made out to be okay because of the hypocrisy of church members. See, they do it too. That's no excuse, but that's what they say. God's mercy is used. They say, "Oh, God wouldn't do that. God wouldn't hurt someone. God wouldn't punish somebody over something so little." Or the individual is caused to think he's strong enough to stand on his own. Notice when he says to put on the whole armor of God, what's the purpose? So that we can stand for the Lord. And that's what we're supposed to be doing. And here, one of the wiles of the devil is to convince people that they can do it on their own. I'm smart enough. I'm talented enough. I'm young enough. I'm cute enough. Whatever. And I can do it on my own. Christ is presented as saving us from sin's consequences rather than sin itself. We're told, hey, the majority of the world says it's okay. So you Christians, you're in the minority. You have to be wrong. Majority rules. That's the way government works. So why doesn't it work in a church? Why doesn't it work with spiritual things? We're convinced that good deeds and offerings allow us to pass. I have a good friend who once told me this. He said, I think I'll be okay. I give, you know, a decent amount to the community. I do a lot for students. I do a lot. I think I'll be okay. I'm charitable. My preacher knows more about this than I do, and I trust him. Anybody ever heard that one? I want you to think about this. There's a guy by the name of Joel Osteen down in Houston, Texas. He's the leader of a church down there. We have, 75 people last Sunday. They have, on average, 52,000 people. But I want you to notice a picture of their building. It says, right up there, Joel Osteen Ministries. What do you think they're there for? They're not there to serve God. And yet he's supposed to know more about it than they do. That's the blind leading the blind. Yeah. You know, that word stand is so important. In these verses, Paul uses that word four times. Stand. We have to be ready. We're not ready if we're sitting. We're not ready if we're kneeling. We're not ready if we're having a good time, just not prepared to answer a Bible question. And I'm not against having a good time and having a little fun. But are we ready to meet the demands of other people? You teach a Bible class and you learn a lot more. You grow a lot more than you ever think. And I'm grateful for this class because this has helped me. And I've already been able to start working with one person. We'll see how that goes. But we have to be ready in season and out of season to address the issues that come up, regardless of how they come up. He says that you may be able to stand against the wiles of the devil. Revelation 2:7 says, "He who has an ear, let him hear what the Spirit says to the churches. To him who overcomes, I will give to eat from the tree of life, which is in the midst of the paradise of God." When you stand, you are standing ready. You're confident in the Word. You're confident in God. You're ready to overcome whatever comes at you. And the reason you want to overcome is because, what have we said all through Ephesians? It's for what purpose? To the glory of God. And when we overcome, God's going to reward us. The thing is, though, the only Only those who put on all the armor, who are going to stand truly ready against Satan's different tactics, are going to be ready to overcome. Those who overcome are conquerors. You know, we sing a song about overcoming and being more than conquerors. And those who are conquerors must first stand to fight. You know, it takes courage. It takes bravery on our parts to sometimes stand up to the different methods and tactics that Satan uses in this warfare. It's not always, it's rarely ever fun. But when it happens, we have to be prepared. We have to be knowledgeable. What do you have to say? What comments do you have?
Mm-hmm. The armor that they beheld was the armor of the Roman soldier. Mm-hmm. One of the reasons the Roman military had such success was that their armor and their training was superior to anyone they met on the field for a long period of time. As you look at
And you know, we saw that with the Israelites time and time again. When God was on their side, they couldn't be touched. They were conquerors. When they turned away from Him, look what happened to them. Same thing for us. Same thing for the Ephesians. And He's trying to get that a point across to them. And I think you're absolutely right. You know, it is a mindset that we have to recognize. We have the superior force in God.
And also, you know, as human beings, we're inclined to compromise.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and there is no compromise in standing against and withstanding. You know, it's truth, and there is no compromise to truth.
Anyone else? Absolutely. As we look at verse 12, he says, "For we do not wrestle against flesh and blood, but against principalities, against powers, against the rulers of the darkness of this age, against spiritual hosts of wickedness and in the heavenly places. He's talking right there. He's very out front with it. He's saying, look, you're facing something that's not of this world. You're facing something that is not necessarily going to come and attack you physically. He's coming at you spiritually. He's attacking your very soul. And, you know, going back to that analogy earlier, you know, we're willing to put on protective gear when we're doing something dangerous because we see it as threatening our physical bodies. Are we willing to put on the spiritual armor, the spiritual protective gear that will protect our soul? And so he's saying, we do not wrestle against flesh and blood, but against principalities, against powers, against the rulers of the darkness of this age. Satan's using the rulers of this age. He's using political leaders. He's using the things of this world to attack our souls. Think about the media. Think about our politicians. Think about the different institutions that are out there that we're all aware of. Even education. I'm an educator, and it happens in education. The more, statistically, the more education you have, the more liberal you become. And the more free thinking you become. And Paul's saying, look, this is something that Satan uses against you. He uses that unique term, wrestle. You know, that kind of goes back to that gladiator mentality. Something that they would be familiar with as well. And this is an internal struggle. You know, we use that, we say, I'm wrestling with something. Or I'm wrestling with myself. I've got something I'm wrestling with. You know, sin tends to be an inner struggle in our mind and in our heart. How are we going to wrestle with the devil and temptation when we're faced with it? Are we going to give in? Are we going to compromise? Or are we going to put our faith and our trust in God? We're going to put on the whole armor of God, and when sin and temptation comes at us, are we going to stand up and say, no, not happening. Not today, not tomorrow, not ever. This internal struggle is something we have to work on. Just because you go in the water doesn't mean it just vanishes like that. And we each have problems that we have to face, that we have to deal with. And this ought to give us a lot of comfort for the fact that God allows us to come to Him and ask for forgiveness. Because we will mess up. We will stumble and fall. In verse 13, he says, therefore, take up the whole armor of God, that you may be able to withstand in the evil day, and having done all, to stand. You know, and we have our Roman soldier there. That's what they were familiar with. You know, the Romans had taken what the Greeks had done and improved on it. And Paul is using this analogy. This is what he's going to use for the next four or five verses right here. And he's going to build off of this, and he's going to say, look, this is the example you need to have. You need to be fully ready mentally. You need to be fully ready spiritually to handle these things that are coming after you, that are going to attack your soul. And, you know, I've always heard, and we say this here, repetition, repetition, repetition is how we learn. In education, there's this old quote that says, if you say it once, it's important. If you say it twice, it's more important. If you say it three times, you better write it down. And if you say it four times, you better memorize it. Well, I'd say, you know, Paul's going to say, stand four times right here. We better memorize that. Notice he says, therefore, take up the whole armor of God that you may be able to withstand in the evil day. There's no doubt that that evil day is coming. It will come at each one of us. It's coming. It will come. It will come again. And we have to be able to withstand in that day and in that time. And he says, and having done all, that gives you the idea and the impression that you better be doing everything you can do. Just like he says, put on the whole armor of God, you better be doing everything that you can do so that you can stand and withstand the devil. And then he gets into the actual armor. In verse 14, he says, stand therefore, having girded your waist with truth. And, you know, the ancient Romans, they had this belt, this military belt. It kept a lot of their armor together and in place. A lot of times there would be a dagger on the side, a sword on the other side, or a sword behind them. And so this belt that you're going to gird yourself with is an important piece of the armor. It's also protecting your lower body in a lot of ways. And truth is what will protect us, just as untruth is there to destroy us. It's there to kill us. Truth guides our decision making. Truth is essential for us to prepare for every single day of our lives. Truth sanctifies and purifies, and it allows us to fight without being hindered. Truth is meant to be shared with others. Truth is found in God's Word, and truth frees us from the devil's lies. You know, all those things that we just said, the wiles of the devil, those are lies that the devil throws out there at us. You're smart enough, you're good enough, you're rich enough, you're kind enough, you're charitable enough. Lies, lies, and lies. More lies than a politician. And he says, gird your waist with truth. Truth is what's going to keep our armor together. That's going to keep us standing, helping us stand firm when this happens. So, Doug.
So we need to keep coming back to truth also. And we'll see that all of these pieces of armor are just a different way of saying be clothed from the bottom of your feet to the top of your head with the Word of God. But it's interesting the order in which he tells them to put these things on is pretty much the order that the Roman soldier would put his armor on.
Yeah. Yeah, they, you know, like you said, a lot of people look at soldiers and they see just a soldier. But everything about a soldier and the uniform that they wear and the weapons that they have on them and about them, everything is there for a purpose, and everything is located in its spot for an essential purpose. You know, I met with a lady today, and it's interesting. Even our modern-day uniforms are set up this way. They're set up with purpose and symbolism. And, you know, you look at the American flag on a soldier's uniform. There's a reason it looks backwards. It's because that way, when wherever the soldier goes, the American flag is going forward. The stars are here and the stripes are on the back, if you don't know what I'm talking about. So it's opposite of what we're accustomed to seeing. But when you look at any soldier in any uniform, where their gun is, where their ammo is, where their knife is, everything, it all has a purpose, not only for functionality, but also purpose in terms of location on their body. And that's what the Romans had already understood. Oh, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. If he reaches there and it's not there, he can't say, well, where is it? You know, and at times that it's not there.
You know,
so it will be where it's supposed to be, or he might as well not even have it, because in the time it takes you to find it, it's too late.
Just in Jefferson County 2 weeks ago, there was a fight that broke out. School resource officer responds to that fight. He goes in there. School resource officer is a fully trained police officer and everything. And he gets into this fight. He calls for backup because it's more than he can handle by himself. And you know what he did? He tased the kid. He reaches across his belt. He pulls out the taser, shoots the taser at this student, tases the student. And my first response is, I'm glad he reached this way and not this way, because here's his gun, here's the taser. He knew exactly where that tool was. He was confident not only where it was, but that it would function the way it was designed to function. And he reached for it and used it. And that's the way the uniform's supposed to be. That's the way the Roman soldiers had it. That's the way it should be for us. We should be clothed from head to toe, fully prepared, knowing exactly what tools are at our disposal, and using them. Rose. Yeah.
And he had to make sure it was functioning at the correct what it's going to whatever amperage, whatever unit it is.
Absolutely. Freddie.
You notice this protection is always talked about the front. Nothing for the back. In fact, 1 Peter 3:15 tells us to be ready always to an answer for the hope of life. And 1 Peter 4:11, he says, if any man speak,
actually, the armor, well, but to clarify, the Roman soldiers, when they put armor on, their plates, it came from the backside, and it came over their shoulders and buckled on the sides and in the front. And so they were still protected in the back. And, you know, even though, obviously, the way you read it, it's directed at, you know, you're facing sin head on. The idea of the whole armor of God is that it envelops you. Front and back and on the sides, top to bottom. Yeah.
Righteousness. He says, and that's the next thing, called the breastplate of righteousness. From truth comes righteousness. Now, we know the Word of God teaches us righteousness, and the grace of God teaches us righteousness, and all of that. But this is righteousness in action. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And how shiny it was, and all of that. And so basically, he's talking about the work of God in action. You know, if you're always doing what God tells you to do, are you going to be able to stand against the wiles of the devil? Sure.
Yeah.
You see, but your good works are seen, God's good work, God's praise, people aren't impressed. It was, there's a lot of things written about, you know, the Roman military and how they looked, and as they were coming into battle, a lot of times they would march, the sun would be shining
off there.
And so forth. And
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. I mean, especially in Ephesus, where, you know, it was a major Roman province and everything. So, I mean, you're exactly right.
The Romans were the first ones to develop. I don't know if they really even knew it or not, but as they worked on the, this is called segmented armor, so that they could move.
Mm-hmm. And thank you all.